Welcome back to the Clear Admit MBA Admissions Podcast. I'm your host, Graham Richmond, and I'm joined by Alex Brown. Alex, how are things going this week?
Very good, Graham.
So here we are. This is the Wiretaps Podcast for Monday, December 16th. And man, what a week we had last week, huh? On the website in terms of admissions decisions. As I know, many of our listeners were glued to the site, I'm sure. But you know, Harvard Business School, Kellogg, Stanford, Berkeley, Georgetown, UNC, HEC, Darden, Oxford, Tuck, and Tepper. They all gave out round one decisions last week. So it was a real scene on the site to see all these live wire entries coming in and the discussions happening in the chat rooms. You were there on the front lines engaging with people. What did you make of it? It was pretty crazy.
Oh, it's fantastic. I mean, this is the, like I'm sure I've said before, my favorite time of the season. You see a lot of activity, a lot of conversation, discussion. And, you know, it's also testament of candidates sort of sharing insights and helping each other out, which is also, you know, we see this sort of year in, year out. It's not unique to this season. But yeah, I really enjoy this time of year. I know it creates a lot of anxiety for folks, but congratulations to all those that have received positive decisions. It's absolutely fantastic. And it's not over yet, right, Graham? We've got more decisions to have roll out this upcoming week.
Yeah, what do we have this week? What are some of the big schools? Because, yeah, we're not done at all, right?
No. I mean, the big day this week, it looks to me it's going to be Wednesday. Wharton and Sloan, Ross, Duke, Anderson are all sort of scheduled to release decisions, their final decisions on Wednesday. They might start, some of them might start making phone calls a day or so earlier. But those are the hard deadlines for those schools. And then there are other schools like McCombs and Washington Olin, Washington Foster. I think Simon's due to finish up its decisions. Cornell Johnson's final notification for round one. Indiana Kelly Siebes even. So lots of activity anticipated this week too, Graham.
Wow. Okay. So yeah, let's hope that everyone gets a proverbial gift in their Christmas stocking of an acceptance letter.
Yes.
But yeah, it's been really busy. I love this time of year too, because the nice thing about round one and this sort of decision weeks is that, you know, people, there's all these different directions people could be going in. You know, you have the people who are kind of crushed by getting, you know, rejected everywhere, but they're kind of re-strategizing for the next round. You've got the people who get into everywhere they applied and start to think, hey, you know, did I aim high enough, or, you know, whatever it might be. So there's a lot of kind of strategy, and we'll get into some of that as we talk through some of the entries that you've handpicked for us this week. But before I do that, I want to just mention that our sponsor, Bain & Company, have a new podcast, and it's called Beyond the Bio. And it is hosted by an actual guest we had on the podcast, Keith Bevins, who is the head of consultant recruiting at Bain. So he's an important guy if you're someone that ever wants to work at Bain. But they have this new podcast. It's called Beyond the Bio. And Keith basically sits down with a whole variety of really extraordinary Bain people. And he gets insights into questions like, you know, how does a former teacher continue to pursue her passion for education while working at Bain? There's another one where he talks with a successful startup founder who actually comes back to Bain years after having left to work there again. And you can actually subscribe to Beyond the Bio at the link that we've provided on the homepage for this podcast episode. So check out Bain's podcast. We love what they've done with it. And we're always, you know, we loved having Keith on our show some time ago. So there you go. But Alex, you have picked out for this week's Wiretaps a couple of entries on ApplyWire, where we're going to talk about those candidates and what their chances are and their strategy. And then just like we did last week, you've picked a decision wire entry where someone has the results and is looking for guidance on where to go. So unless there's anything else, should we just dive in and start to go through these entries?
Yeah, I think we should get started, Graham. I'll just say one thing. It's exciting about this Bain podcast. In an odd coincidence, I just reconnected with one of my colleagues from Wharton when I was an adcom at Wharton, and she was a Bainee prior to that position at Wharton, and she's currently back at Bain in the Singapore office. So a very odd coincidence.
Oh, no, that's great. Yeah. So a lot of people go, you know, do go back, it sounds like, at least from what I've heard about this podcast that they're doing. They've got another one that did that. So yeah, we'll hear more about it on their podcast. And then the last thing, I just want to apologize to our listeners. I have a cold, so my voice is not where it should be today, but I'm here. You know, Alex and I like to do this rain or shine. Whether there are strikes in Paris or horrible rainstorms in Cornwall, England, we're here every week. So, so let's dive in and talk about Wiretap's candidate number one. So this candidate is actually from Chile and is applying now. Work experience in the energy sector prior to business school here. They want to move into kind of tech or venture capital or even entrepreneurship after the MBA. GRE score of 321 and a GPA of 3.0. They have 4.5 years of work experience. And as I said, located in Chile, they've been working in the renewable energy sector, kind of in developing in that domain. They've actually also had some entrepreneurial experience where they've done 2 startups that they founded while they were in university. And they're going to be applying, they actually specify in round 2, and they're looking for guidance. And we actually, you and I both had some back and forth with this candidate because the schools they're looking at are Haas, Stanford, Booth, Anderson, and UVA. And they just wondered, like, does their profile kind of measure up? And the only last detail that I'll add before I let you kind of weigh in, Alex, is that their GPA, they kind of roughly translated it. So technically they have a 5.4 out of 7, and that their ranking, and this was a degree in kind of industrial and electrical engineering, and their ranking in their class is about top 35%. So I just want to add that detail. It gives a little more color to the GPA. But Alex, what do you make of this candidate? I mean, obviously kind of an interesting, you know, candidate, but some red flags potentially too.
Yeah, I can hear your voice creaking a bit there, Graham, as you came to the end of that great explanation for this Wiretaps candidate. So I guess I should try to talk more during this podcast a little bit. But yeah, I think that the one thing, and I think we could probably agree on this, Graham, is the danger sometimes that candidates face if they directly try to convert their GPA into a US conversion. And then just say, well, look, I got a 3.0 GPA. Because I would imagine a 3.0 GPA now from a US school wouldn't place them in the top 35%, do you think? Maybe a 3.2, 3.3 would. But I don't know that. But clearly there's a lot of grade inflation involved in that regard. So this person has a 5.4 out of 7 in electrical and industrial engineering, which I would imagine is quite a rigorous degree course. Their 321 GRE is a little bit concerning in as much as it's 167 on the quant side. And this is an engineering dude, so their quant is very strong, which is good, right?
Yeah, and I actually looked up the percentiles. So we have the quant, they're a 90th percentile, and on the verbal, they're a 64th percentile.
Yeah, and 154 on the verbal. So that's going to be the question. And if this person gets to the interview stage, then all well and good, they can demonstrate their communication skills and so on and so forth in that medium. But I would be a little concerned with that verbal score on the GRE. What business schools really want, Graham, as you'll agree, is active participants. And if English as a medium is compromised, your ability to really contribute and be active and do a lot of wonderful things during your stay in the MBA program does become compromised, and ADCOMs know this. So the candidate won't get the most out of their MBA experience, and fellow classmates won't get the most out of having an experience with the candidate, right? So it's really important for schools to feel comfortable with the English language side. I imagine from a work experience perspective, Graham, this person is very interesting. Renewable energy, working in a big firm, done some interesting things, has also worked in 2 startups of which he founded. That, on top of the fact that this person's from Chile, whatever the right pronunciation is, I think makes this candidate interesting if they can overcome this potential hurdle of their English communication skills. Do you see that as a fair assessment, Graham?
Yeah, I mean, I think they did mention they have yet to get their score on whatever English language test they have to take. So they might be taking the TOEFL or the IELTS or whatever it is. And that could help to counter. I will say, yeah, the fact that they've done two startups, work in renewable energy, and are from Chile is, I mean, those facts should get them a serious look. But, you know, I am worried about, you know, like, let's take a school like Stanford. They're really below, you know, the averages for that program. And I know, you know, Stanford takes a lot of a real variety of people, and I would never tell someone don't apply, because you can't get in if you don't apply, right? But I think it's just something that I'm a little concerned about. So I'm hoping they like hit it out of the park on the English language test. I want for them to have a compelling storyline, ideally one where the goals that they have for the future fit a little bit, at least with what they've done. And I was a little bit worried that they're, you know, they mentioned in their comments they want to move into tech and then maybe into entrepreneurship, but it doesn't seem like, unless I missed it, there's a big tie back to the energy sector. And I don't know, I was sort of like, gee, if one of your chief kind of assets in your application or, you know, kind of selling points is this unique sector experience, then, you know, gosh, wouldn't it be great to be, I mean, obviously, you know, they're applying to schools in California because they did narrow their list. They actually mentioned they're going to add USC in a comment to us, and they're going to eliminate Booth and Darden. So it's like all California, it's all California. I'm like, wow, you know, there's probably a lot happening in the renewable energy sector there. There's all these interesting jobs that could go for, you know, so I just was hoping for a better connection between the past, because if they can tell a compelling story, then we get into a different territory where suddenly the numbers, any blemish on their record is a little bit easier to stomach. So that's all. I think it's an interesting candidate, though, and I wish them the best of luck. Did you have any other points you wanted to add on them? Or?
Yeah, I just like to reinforce that point that you've made, though, Graham. You know, the person wants to be an entrepreneur in the long run. Does the person have an idea, have a passion and interest that they plan to anchor that entrepreneurship around? Or are they just basically saying, you know, I founded a couple of startups already. I'm into doing that kind of stuff. So in the long run, I'm just going to go back and do that kind of stuff. I think it would be a lot more compelling if the person, like you say, anchors it to a particular industry, a particular niche, a focus that they have a passion for. And then if they can make that case and make it compelling, then they can start to think about looking at Stanford's first essay and addressing it. But if you're just saying, well, I'm just going to go back and become an entrepreneur, I think it becomes a bit weaker.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, let's see. I mean, they have time to kind of work on their story, get the essays together. And yeah, so we'll see how it goes. All right, so let's move on to Wiretap's candidate number two. So here we have another ApplyWire entry. This person indicates, I don't know if it's a typo, but they say 2022 for their intake year, but I'm assuming that they're actually applying sooner than that, but I could be wrong. But they're currently working in deal advisory at a top accounting firm, and they want to get into investment banking. They've been working for 5 years total. They have a 690 on the GMAT and a 3.2 GPA. They're in New York and they want to stay in New York. They did share with us that they went to a top 25 undergraduate business school and that they'll be promoted again by the time they apply. They'd love to stay near New York, and they're wondering about their GMAT score in particular. They gave us the breakdown. It's a 47 on the quant, which is a 60 percentile, and a 39 verbal, which is an 89th percentile. And I think those are the main things. They're looking at Cornell, Georgetown, and Stern at the moment, and you did give them a little bit of advice. So what do you make of this candidate, Alex?
Yeah, I just throw it right back to you, Graham, just very quickly, because I know I don't want to overuse your voice.
That's okay.
What does this guy do? Deal advisory, a top accounting firm. What? How do you qualify that as for work experience?
Well, I mean, I'm guessing that he might be brought in when investment banks are kind of doing a deal and they need an auditor or a, you know, some sort of financial opinion from one of the big five, you know, accounting firms. I'm not an expert in this. I have not worked in finance myself, but my guess is that. So I think it's, you know, it's probably, you know, he's probably working at an Ernst & Young or that type of a firm, and he's been there a little while, and it sounds like he's going to be promoted. And so it's probably good. I mean, it's good work experience, and I think it's probably relevant to investment banking in that he's, you know, he's been one of the kind of, it's almost like when the lawyer who's working on kind of, you know, corporate finance law wants to become a banker. This is similar. It's kind of the accountant who wants to go and do the banking side. It's maybe tired of being on the sidelines, wants to actually get in on the deals, right? So it makes sense to me.
Yeah, no, it makes sense to me. I just wanted to clarify, because in my mind, that was kind of how I was thinking it was. But I mean, it's just important to make sure that candidates do explain this stuff well, obviously, in their application essays, and they've got a lot more room in order to do that. But you just don't want to assume that the ADCOM, like us, no direct experience in investment banking, would know exactly what that would mean without the additional explanation. And it, again, in the applications, there's plenty of room for that additional explanation. So my sense is this person, and they reckon that their work experience is their strength. And I would imagine over the course of 5 years, they've done very well. And through doing that, they've gotten this interest now to switch directly into investment banking, and probably have a bunch of people telling them that they should and can and should could do this. What I was hoping to see from this candidate is some other aspect of who this person is. Passions, interests outside of work, and something to help separate and distinguish and differentiate the person. But like a lot of our candidates, they've been so super busy at work, the extracurricular side has sort of suffered. So I'm just wondering how this candidate can go out and differentiate themselves. Obviously, the GPA GMAT combination 693.2 is not going to have schools chasing and running after them. 690, we know, Graham, that's pretty decent, but as it fits with the averages at the top schools, it's lower than average. Even I would say at least two of the schools on the list, I'm not sure what McDonough's average GMAT score is. Maybe 690 is around that. And the GPA also would be a little bit below average. So that combination doesn't help. So I would say the candidate really needs to make sure that their recommendation forms, that those that are recommending them, are really able to support and show the quality of this candidate's experiences to date, that they can show impact and various other things, which is oftentimes quite difficult in this sort of advisory type role. So that's kind of where I'm coming from. The final thing is, you know, I do like the sort of the choice of schools, in as much as you've got Stern and Cornell and McDonough. So you've got a little bit of a spread. You've got top 20 program in there, top 16 programs in there. So they're not just shooting at the same level of school. So that could help ensure that they get a positive decision, hopefully, fingers crossed. But yeah, what were your thoughts, Graham?
First of all, I appreciate this person posting, and you know, I obviously these entries are great. It's always good to discuss, and I think this candidate is instructive for reasons I'm going to explain now. I'm kind of down on this candidate in terms of their odds, and the reason is that I could be wrong, but I'm kind of envisioning that this candidate is, I mean, they're in New York, male, I'm guessing. I mean, I don't think he specified or she specified, but I'm pretty sure it's a guy in New York, maybe white and male. I mean, that's, you know, kind of that would be the combination that I'm picturing. And so, and, you know, undergraduate business major, working in finance, and I, you know, he mentioned that he thinks his work experience is better than, you know, is on the high end of what, you know, the schools he's targeting might see. And I think the work experience is probably fine, but I'm worried that there's nothing, as you say, like he said he's too busy to really have extracurriculars, but you need only read other Apply Wire entries on our site to see that there are people who find time to do things in addition to having, you know, big time jobs. So I guess my fear was, I'm like, okay, undergraduate business guy, white, male, New York, working in finance, they're kind of a dime a dozen. And the thing that really struck me was that 60th percentile on the quantitative section of the GMAT, because here's someone who studied undergraduate business and is working in finance or accounting now. And so I was really worried that, you know, so not only is there a 3.2, which is below average for top schools, but it's that combination of how the two, the test score and the GPA work together. And I was just worried that they'd be kind of a red flag. I just was looking for, sure. Do people get into these schools with a 690 and a 3.2? Obviously, but what's their profile? What do they look like? What else do they have to offer? And I'm worried that I haven't heard that yet. Now, this candidate probably is an interesting guy, probably does some other things or has hobbies, or, you know, there's gotta be stuff in this person's background that could make for an interesting, storyline, but I didn't hear it in this post. And so I was worried that, even though there is a range of schools, like obviously, you know, Stern is probably the hardest to get into on his list, then Cornell, and then Georgetown, but none of them are really a walk in the park. And so I guess if this person has to go to school next fall, then I think they need to cast an even wider net. I'm not sure what that next school would be. I mean, I know they want to stay in the New York area, or at least kind of mid-Atlantic, Northeast corridor, it sounds like. And they mentioned they're not going to take the test again, I believe, right? Yeah, he said he can't improve further, taking it multiple times. So I'm a little bit worried about this candidate, just because the tone of the post or their responses to us just made me wonder if they were overestimating their profile. But anyway, that's my kind of, sorry to be negative on this, but that's my take.
But I think you make a good point, is how is this candidate going to differentiate themselves? And like you say, maybe there is something there that we're not aware of that helps them stand out, because everything sort of points to a very cookie cutter sort of profile as in terms of what we're seeing. I mean, hopefully they're listening to this and say, oh, yeah, well, I do play in a band, or I do this, or I have done that, or whatever. And they recognize that that's important to bring out to help them. You know, admissions, ADCOM, they admit individuals, and they want to admit people that they like, that are going to have impact on their campus, that are going to do something interesting other than do well in the classroom and get the job. So what else are you going to be doing in that campus environment? And what is it about your background that shows that you're going to be doing that?
Yeah, agreed. So again, I appreciate this person posting. I'm hoping that the advice we give here helps them to kind of really look for that secret sauce that they have in their background that can make for a compelling candidacy. I did want to mention, he also indicated he has a CPA. And I would say that's great. It's kind of feather in your cap, you know, nice thing to have. It doesn't, for one reason or another, it doesn't really work to counteract like a low GMAT score or a GPA that's below average or something. It doesn't, but it's viewed favorably. It's just viewed as a professional credential. So it kind of slots in the professional portion of your candidacy as opposed to the academic portion. So that's it. But I wish this person the best of luck as they put together their apps, which I'm assuming again are for maybe round two this year, or, you know, it was hard to tell from their post, but let's hope that they get everything together and can tell a compelling story and get into some of these schools.
Yeah, best of luck.
All right, so let's move on to Wiretap's candidate number 3. So this is a Decision Wire entry, which means this person's already gotten news from schools, and they are undecided. They do not know where they want to go. They've been admitted to Stern with what amounts to a free ride. They've been accepted to Yale SOM, and they recently learned, which they alerted us to in the comments, that they were admitted to Berkeley Haas as well. And I believe they're waiting on Wharton, which will be any day now, right? So they're almost done, but they have these offers, and they posed the question to the Clear Admit audience of, you know, where should they go? So free ride at Stern or acceptances at Yale and Berkeley. They didn't mention any scholarship dollars in either of those, so hard to say, but they want to do consulting, and they have a GMAT score of 740. So what was your take? I know you had some back and forth with this candidate.
Yeah, and yourself, as well as another candidate. And that's a beautiful thing about DecisionWire. Whilst on ApplyWire, it's typically me and you and the candidate going back and forth. On DecisionWire, other candidates generally weigh in too, because they're wrestling with the same decisions. So that's always very, very good. So clearly the full ride at Stern seems very compelling. When weighed up against the admit decision from Yale, and now more recently the admit decision from Haas. So, you know, I guess one of my first questions would be back to this candidate is, where do they plan to be post-MBA? So is there a geographic preference that could help influence their decision? And if their geographic preference is on the West Coast, then I do think that puts Haas in a stronger position. If it's to be in New York City, then clearly that favours Stern and Yale more so perhaps over Haas. So I do think, I mean we've talked about this before, Graham, that has to dial into a candidate's decision making, right? Geographically, where they want to be.
Yeah, I mean, as much as we tout all of these schools as global powerhouses, there is some bias around location. If you were to look at where people go to Haas end up, I mean, the largest concentration of them is clearly going to be in California, and if you look at Stern, it's going to be New York. So there's definitely advantages. Now, I think the real question becomes, I personally think you're right. Like, the NYU full ride is really hard to walk away from. I mean, that is a game changer in terms of your financial situation. And you know, even though this candidate's going to do consulting, you know, you never know. This is like, I would, you know, it's kind of like the athlete, baseball player, whatever, football player who takes a big contract at a very young age that's maybe not as big as they could get, you know, down the road someday, but there's a lot of security in taking that contract. And so my questions were related to yours. I think I would want to know, where do they want to be long term geographically, and also, like, what industry, because that could impact things as well. So if they're saying, oh, I really want to work in tech, or if they say, I really want to work in, like, media, or, you know, then that, you know, you could have different markets that come to mind.
So they've explicitly stated consulting, just post-MBA career consulting. I think that's all we really know. But certainly within consulting, there can be strengths in different areas, right?
Yeah. And I just was wondering, like, you know, most people do consulting for a handful of years and then move on. And so I was like, well, if they have any inkling of, like, what they want to do, then, you know, that could be instructive. The other thing was, what kind of a campus environment are they looking for? I mean, you know, I love both the Stern and the Haas campuses. I've been to both. They're both vibrant, but they're also really different, right? I mean, so there's this, you know, San Francisco Bay Area vibe to Berkeley. Obviously, the weather's really different, you know, whereas Stern is, you know, it's in the hustle and bustle of Manhattan. And all the good things that go with that too, right? But so it's just, they're really different. And so I would ask them, like, well, what kind of environment are you looking for? and then, I mean, if we're looking at just, they talk about ranking. They seem to be pretty insistent on, oh, Haas is way better ranked than the others. And I was sort of like, well, you know, Haas is kind of, these days we would argue, it's sort of like if you had an M8 instead of an M7, Haas might be that eighth school, right? So it's definitely top school. But, you know, Yale's a top 10 school, arguably, and NYU's right there as well. I mean, maybe it falls into the top 12 or 15 at worst, right? So these are all really close in ranking. So I don't think that making the decision on ranking makes a lot of sense here. I think you make the decision based on the money and on your goals and what environment might be best suited for the 2 years you're going to spend. But I think at the end of the day, it's hard to argue walking away from a free ride at a school that, you know, sure, maybe it's the third ranking of the three you got into, but it's pretty darn close. So, yeah, I don't know. Any other thoughts on that one, though? Because it's tricky.
Yeah, it's very tricky. And you I'm glad you brought up the point on rankings, because that was going to be my next question to you. You know, the difference in ranking between Yale, Haas and Stern is not that great. And I would argue that for different sort of, you know, geographic goals, career goals, or whatever, you can argue any of those three is a better option than the other two, depending on those differences. So it really does boil down to, where does this candidate want to be post-MBA? Which of these programs has the strength in terms of their alumni network and their sort of regional pull for that industry, for that geography, or whatever it is? And then factoring all that in, the fact that you get a free ride at Stern. The other thing that the candidate could do, Graham, is go to the other schools and negotiate. So, you know, we'll see that now over the next, you know, month or so. Is candidates say, well, I've got an offer here. Are you willing to match it? Schools don't like this, but it happens, right?
We're going to get a phone call. We're going to get a phone call now from the director of admission who we know quite well over at Yale and at Haas. They're going to be like, why are you telling people that? But yeah, no, I agree. That's actually a good point.
But the reality is for the Yale and Haas folks, they're going to be glad that the guys, I assume guy gender neutral, but the guys negotiating, otherwise they'll miss out completely if they go to Stern on a full ride, right? So you know, there's definitely a point of negotiation that can occur with a candidate like this. And then finally, Graham, this could all be a moot point, because on Wednesday they're going to hear from Wharton. If they get into Wharton, then they're going to have to post again and we'll have another conversation, because when we look at rankings, and I think these three schools are there's marginal differences, but they're small. But then, you know, Wharton versus these three, I think that the gap, the difference is a little larger. So full ride Stern versus Wharton, that would be an interesting conversation.
Granted, Alex and I are not making this stuff up when we talk about where we see these schools falling. I mean, we've seen over the years, thanks to all of you posting to Decision Wire, we get a good bead on where people go and you know, what happens on the margin. And I would argue that, that Yale, SOM, Haas, maybe NYU, and even Tuck, they're kind of in a grouping together, probably, where, as you correctly point out, one could make the argument to go to any of the others based on personal preference or career planning.
And adding Duke, Ross, Cornell, Anderson, they're all in that mix. Yeah.
Yeah, this is a challenge. The other thing, I read an article the other day about how people spend all kinds of time making certain types of decisions and then not nearly enough making others. So I'm not being very descriptive here, but let me give you an example. People will like spend hours poring over the specs on whatever type of flat screen television they're going to buy, or a phone, or, you know, trying to figure out exactly which one to get. And then sometimes with decisions like this, they're sort of like, oh, well, Stern's giving me a free ride, I'll just go there. That makes sense. But, you know, I just want this candidate to understand that where you go to school has a permanent kind of impact on your life. Like if you're, I mean, for example, there's a much greater chance that you live out your days on the West Coast of the United States if you go to Haas than there would be if you go to Stern. And that's not a bad thing. I'm not saying that one's better than the other, but I just encourage this person to think about it, because it's definitely, you know, there are two years of your life where you're going to spend, and then you're going to carry that brand around for the rest of your life too. So important to think about. But yeah, on the surface right now, I'd say we wait to hear what Wharton says. But this candidate, they just need to ask themselves these basic questions about their career plan and where they would be happiest, and their personal financial situation.
And also, of course, if Wharton comes through, then you'd probably say, well, you know, if they haven't done so already, why don't they toss an application into Harvard and Stanford for round two? But right. Again, a conversation for another day.
Yeah, gets complicated there. So, all right, well, that's, I think, you know, again, best of luck to this candidate. You're going to find out in a couple days here about Wharton. So best of luck, and thanks so much for sharing and having that dialogue with us on the site. We love this interplay. That's why we love seeing you guys in the chat rooms and posting your LiveWire entries and everywhere on the site. So Alex, anything else for this week's show? Otherwise, we will be back next week with another episode. We're going to try to just keep on, you know, getting episodes out to you all each week, even during the holidays. So stay tuned. I would really appreciate it if people would leave reviews on iTunes or wherever you're listening, because I don't think we've had a review and it's been like months. We got a lot of ratings, so sure, rate us 5 stars. But
have we got any listeners?
I think we have listeners, yeah. But anyway, so anything else though, Alex, that you wanted to add before we wrap up this episode?
No, I just wish everyone best of luck that's waiting to hear decisions, as well as the folks that are starting to gear up for round two. I mean, I know that's another challenge in of itself, but it's a fascinating time of year, and best of luck to everybody.
Yeah, best of luck to all. And I will just echo Alex's point. If you're working on round two applications, get to work, because you don't want to be doing these on New Year's Eve. I'll just leave it at that. All right. Well, best of luck, everybody. We'll be back next week. And thanks again for listening, as always.